Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikalskis, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books.
I'm joined by Nick Bunker, whose new book, Young Benjamin Franklin, The Birth of Ingenuity, is now available wherever fine books are sold. Nick, when I think of Benjamin Franklin, the image that comes to mind is a wise and mature man, sort of a grandpa-like. What made you think he would be an interesting character as a young man?
Well, Brian, thank you for having me. Great to be with you. My previous book, An Emperor on the Edge, which was all about the onset of the Revolutionary War, didn't deal with that. Deal with the Franklin you're talking about, the elderly Franklin, the Franklin on the $100 bill. I was dealing there with the process by which he became disenchanted with the British in the 1770s. But I thought it would be worthwhile and interesting to probe back into his earlier life to try and come up with some answers about how he came to be such a multifaceted, multi-talented person, and also to get some idea of what was the source of his kind of striving and his ambition. So that's really what I wanted to get at in this book.
So his life basically spanned, give or take a few years, the entire 18th century. What years do you consider him young?
In the book, I deal with him up to the age of 40, and the reason for that is that's the point when he got to be 40, when he had this great change in his life, that is to say when he became a scientist. The book ends with the moment when he begins his experiments with electricity that really catapulted him to stardom internationally. So I'm covering the first 40 years, and also I deal with his forebears too. I want to deal with his family, his father, his uncles, who were talented people in their own right, having come from England itself. And what I wanted to get at there was the kind of matrix of talents and an endowment of skills and aptitudes that they conveyed to Benjamin.
How did young Franklin compare physically with the Franklin that we know on the $100 bill?
Well, as far as we know, he was about 5'10", 5'11", which was probably about 4 inches taller than the average at the time. He was also physically very robust. I mean, he was an athletic youth, very keen swimmer. He appears to have been quite a good boxer as well. There are some indications of that. And, of course, as a printer, of course, you had to be strong because it was a very physical process. You had to combine the ability to do very minutely focused, concentrated work with print, with type, but also you had to be capable of actually managing and working the printing press itself. So he was a strong guy, and he made that impression on people of being someone who had physical presence, and I think that's a really important aspect of Franklin.
He went to London, you know, early in life, and wasn't there a whole long time. But why did he have to go there? Why did he go there? I mean, what was it about his youth that prompted him to cross the pond?
Well, he was very keen to do so. I mean, he was only 18. The reason he went was because he thought he was going on behalf of the governor of Pennsylvania, a guy called Sir William Keith, who Franklin had become friendly with. And the plan was for Keith to finance this journey by Franklin to London to purchase printing apparatus, which Franklin was going to bring back to Philadelphia so that he could work as a printer effectively on behalf of the governor. I mean, that was the plan. In fact, what Franklin discovered when he got to London was that Sir William Keith had been deceiving him. Keith wasn't going to provide the finance. Franklin couldn't buy the apparatus he wanted, and instead he had to go and find a job. But in that period in London, when he's 18, 19, 20 years old, what Franklin was able to do was to give himself a first-class training in the very latest techniques of printing in London, and also to get a tremendous exposure to the capital of the British Empire at a time. It was a very interesting period in terms of science, the arts, and so on. So that period in London was, we feel like it was a bit like kind of Franklin's graduate school or business school. And he was able to come back to England having learned... come back to America having learned an enormous amount.
Did it feel, since the British colonies were, you know, under the control of the British at the time, was it like leaving the country, or was it a totally different atmosphere for him over there in London?
Well, Franklin, you see, had the great advantage that, of course, his father had been a Londoner himself. His father had actually come from the countryside originally, and then his father had trained in London as a dyer of silk. And also Franklin had an uncle, Benjamin, who had also been a Londoner. And so living in Boston, Franklin would have been familiar through the stories they told him about what he was going to expect in England. So he was very familiar, and he'd read lots of English books and so on. When he arrived, of course, what he found was that people did regard him as a bit of an oddity. I mean, he was a big guy, he was American, he stood out from the crowd. Nevertheless, he was able to make his way pretty quickly. I mean, even though he was, what, only in his late teens, he managed to talk himself into jobs. He did a superb job of printing himself. I mean, he printed a book of his own that he wrote. So he kind of took to the metropolis, you know, very readily. He enjoyed living in London greatly. I think in many ways he was actually quite sorry to have to come home.
I'm chatting with Nick Bunker about his book, Young Benjamin Franklin, The Birth of Ingenuity. Benjamin Franklin had the famous autobiography that we've all read in high school civics class or American history class. But as we looked through that book, that wasn't the most, I mean, it's a very self-serving autobiography, right?
I wouldn't say self-serving. I mean, the trouble is it's not really a detailed autobiography. It's kind of an autobiographical sketch or an essay. He wrote it in fits and starts over a period of a good many years, about 15 to 20 years. And the early section, which deals with his early life in Boston and then in Philadelphia and this period in London, he wrote in the space of a summer vacation. So the problem with it is that in places some of the details are a bit sketchy. He didn't have access to all the kind of notes and documents he would have wanted. What I've done here in this book is I've looked again at the story he tells, and I've gone around it, gone into some of the characters that he mentions. I've tried to put it in its setting. And I've also tried to unearth aspects of that story that Franklin kind of skated over. So what I'm trying to fill in all the kind of the gaps in the picture, so to speak.
Something I found interesting, Franklin was both a journalist and a printer. Was that common for the people printing the newspaper to also be writing the newspaper?
Yes, it was common in America. It wasn't so common in London. But in America, you see, there was always, in the colonial period, there was a shortage of people with all the necessary skills. There's a serious shortage of skilled labor in the colonies, so people had to turn their hands to a whole variety of different tasks. We don't know exactly how much of his newspaper, the Pennsylvania Gazette, Franklin actually wrote, because, of course, in those days, newspapers were all journalism was anonymous. But he clearly did write a substantial quantity on it. And I think what's an interesting aspect of this is that Franklin really had to work enormously hard. For the 20-odd years while he was producing the Pennsylvania Gazette himself personally, he was having to work very, very hard indeed. It was what I call the weekly grind. And it was only when he got to the point where the newspaper was so successful that he could pass it on to somebody else that he was then able to turn to his scientific work. So Franklin really had to wait a long time until the moment, as I say, when he got to the age of 40 or so, when he could become the scientist he really wanted to be. And I think the fact that he did that, it just goes to show what a kind of dogged, persistent, tenacious kind of character Franklin was.
You know, Franklin has this idea that, you know, he invented electricity and all these different things that we know about. But how much of that was a collaboration effort?
Well, there were two things. First of all, he read a great deal. So he prepared himself for these experiments by studying the latest scientific textbooks, which he would acquire from Europe, and studying scientific papers. So he familiarized himself, first of all, with all the scientific literature. But then, when he started the scientific work, yes, he did have collaborators. He worked with craftsmen, you see. He had a friend who was a silversmith who could help him build the electrical generator and the machines. He had another friend who was a lawyer, who was a very methodical kind of person, a chap called Hopkinson, who also helped him and helped him to compose the papers. And he did, yes, he had a team of collaborators. And again, I think that's very important, that Franklin was more of a team player than some biographers suggest. He was always somebody who believed in creating institutions, societies, colleges, whatever, to carry on his work. And that's a very important aspect, this element of Franklin being somebody who wanted to build a permanent team, permanent institutions, rather than just depending on his own efforts.
And then one more theme you have in the book is religion. How did his religious beliefs evolve over time?
Well, it was a very gradual process. I mean, he was educated as a Presbyterian. I mean, his father, Josiah Franklin, who had come over from England as a political and religious refugee, was a very keen Presbyterian Christian. Franklin was educated in that way. But then he had this period in his teens when he lost his faith, you know, primarily as a result of reading too many books of philosophy and so forth. So he had a period when he became a skeptic. In fact, when he was in his London period, I think it's possible to argue that actually he was a downright atheist. But then he kind of rode back from that. And what he tried to do in his 20s and his 30s was he tried to devise his own kind of synthetic religion, his own kind of synthetic belief in God. Not necessarily kind of orthodox Christianity, but something he could believe in. which he assembled out of books he read, out of poetry that he read. He was a very keen lover of poetry. And then, of course, also he discovered Freemasonry. And Freemasonry was terribly important for Franklin because that was a way by which he could share this new faith of his with other people in Philadelphia. So he became the kind of key figure in Freemasonry in Pennsylvania. Very important for Franklin.
All right, we just scratched the surface of it. The book is Young Benjamin Franklin, The Birth of Ingenuity by Nick Bunker. It's available now wherever fine books are sold. Nick, a fantastically entertaining and interesting book. Thanks for putting it out, and thanks for joining us today.
Thank you very much, Debra.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikalskis. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com. Also, be sure to like Having Read That on Facebook and subscribe to our iTunes podcast. Thanks to segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time.
Electricity, yeah, you can all thank me. Took some lightning, a kite, and a fat brass.